Our world is dying, politicians are lying, and just when you feel like crying, sit and have a listen to people who have shit themselves.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Evie.
I'm Claudia, and we are the hosts of the Poodcast.
Sorry, that just went so smoothly, I can't get over
it. Oh my God, stop it. We didn't even talk about who was, we just knew who had to do it based on who was doing the introduction.
We've synced up like a rumba on Strictly.
We've synced up
like... One couldn't work without the other. One of us is the male partner. In it looks like we're doing all the, we're not doing anything.
Very heteronormative of you, Claudia.
Oh, but as in... Oh, the other one could be the male partner too, but as in,
not the leader.
Yeah, the leader.
Because men lead, not women.
Apparently in fucking rumbas. Rumbas are shit dance anyway. I shouldn't compare our podcast to the rumba.
Well, when
it's done well, Christ, it's sexy. God,
you sound 1,000 years old.
Well, when it's done right, I mean, I'm really showing my age now. But
Kelvin Fletcher, am I right? Anyway.
Was he in Hollyoaks? Back in the day.
Was he Hollyoaks? No, I think he was Corrie or Emmerdale.
Emmerdale.
Oh, Kelvin.
Kelvin.
The final's getting closer, guys. Oh, I'm my mum listened to this, so I'm worried that she's going to steal my idea. Actually, no, this will come out the day after the Strictly final, so it's fine.
Perfect.
We always have a Strictly final party in my family because we're just those kind of people. And this year, instead of just dressing up, we always just be like, just throw as many sequins on yourself as possible. This year, we've said you have to dress up as something from Strictly, I was gonna go as Glitterball because I've got a disco helmet. And I've got a silver sequin jumpsuit, and obviously I'm a walking helmet. However, I was like, it's too easy because I got the shit already. I wanted to go something a bit more abstract, so I've decided what I'm gonna go as.
You're gonna go as the corpse of Bruce Forsyth.
Fuck.
What? That would be more challenging.
I'll put up with a lot of potty mouth on this podcast, but talking about dead Bruce is so disrespectful.
Then your family, when you arrive, they could say, nice to see you, to see you, nice.
Nice to see you, to see you. I was about to say dead, but I'm better than that.
You are. Well, you're clearly not.
I'm clearly not. But what I'm going to come as is the Strictly curse.
That is a wait, Wiz Rich, surely.
Well, he wants to come as Greg Grimmauld. But the only reason he doesn't want to do it is because he's going to have to shave his beard and he's not sure if he wants to, but he loves Craig so much.
He's got to do it.
And we've got a paddle. Fuck, we're boring people.
You've got a paddle?
Someone got it for me during COVID. Not a sex paddle. Oh. A rating paddle. Although that could be a sex paddle still, like mid-coitus 7.
Inches? Sorry.
Oh, funny. No, I'm joking. It's fine.
Rich, Claudia just said you had a small penis.
Anywho.
Okay.
He'd make it to the final. Anyway.
not but necessarily win.
I want to make it to the final. I'm not saying he'd win. But who wants to say that about themselves? Also, not always the right person wins. But, so I'm going to come as a Strictly curse. So I'm thinking of like going
amazing,
like full
Claudia.
Kind of Disney witch and then printing off couples and like drawing a big like heartbreak in the middle of them and somehow attaching them to the dress.
That is genuinely, I think, phenomenal.
Right?
It's a great
but
idea.
How do you come as a curse? Do you think I should go as like a witch? Or like I was thinking like could go like kind of like full green and like poison ivy style kind of thing. I don't know. How do you dress up as a curse?
See, the thing is, my immediate instinct was to be kind of a hooded, cloaked, witchy thing.
Yes.
But actually, that's not the curse. That's the person doing the curse.
Yes.
So how would one go as an actual curse?
I don't know.
I think it's got to be more conceptual. I think it would have to be, I'm thinking, an all-in-one just sort of black faceless suit with the couples on.
Okay.
I would just like to briefly talk about which couples that this is going to involve because I'd like to get be really gossipy.
So obviously the main one's Stacey Dooley and Kevin Clifton.
What?
Yeah, they're I don't know if they're married, but they have a baby. They've
yeah, but was she with someone else?
Yes, she had like a fiance on the show.
I did not know about that. Okay, but because in my head, the main one, which I think was all over everywhere was the Sean Walsh kiss, catch yes, a kiss.
Where he leant in. I was with my whole family watching that scene and we watched it about 25 times. No, so the no. kiss. So
the kiss, it happened.
Yes, but there was another separate thing with Katia where she was with an athlete, the swimmer.
Why are you doing that with your arms?
Because I'm swimming.
Doggy paddle.
Is it Michael Phelps, see the swimmer?
He's a swimmer, but he's American. Yes,
but I swear he was some. No, it wasn't Michael. Somebody was on it. I swear it was an athlete, but I can't remember. Maybe it wasn't an athlete. But whoever's with Katia, and there was a bit where he went in as if to kiss her, right. And then you literally saw it on camera where he recoiled.
Rich.
I want to find out who the fucking swimmer. Let me look it up.
The catcher and Sean Walsh thing was scandalous.
She actually did kiss him.
That was papped. That was outside of the dance. That was. And then his then fiance released an absolutely scathing.
Yeah, babe. Who we're recording?
Not time for this.
Just super quick. Come in, Richard. Don't be scared.
Hello.
Who was the person that Katia nearly kissed on Strictly? He leant in. We were all watching it. Yeah, swimmer. Adam Peaty.
Thank you,
darling. Many happy returns to you and your kin.
It's nearly your 1 year anniversary.
Woohoo. Oh my God, yes, oh. Adam Peaty. He literally got watched it.
Michael Phelps. I knew as soon as I said it, I was like, it's not right.
I'm nothing but a walking correction. Yeah, he leaned in during the thing was so passionate. He leaned in and he literally went to kiss it. And then you see it in his eyes of him going, fuck, I shouldn't have done that.
I want to watch this clip.
Yeah, but that wasn't a Strictly curse. But yes,
okay.
I mean,
Katia seems to be at the heart of a few of these.
Yeah.
There was also Rachel Riley and Pasha.
Yes. Yeah, who were still together.
Yeah. They've got two kids. I'm going to burp. Sorry.
Oh, man.
So sorry. It was Kelly editing this one.
Yeah. No. The Kelly is sorry, editing Kelly. This one. Sorry, Kelly.
So sorry, crew.
I wish I should have done more research. While
I ask you about your life, I won't pay attention. I'll look this up. No, I'm joking.
You can.
No, I won't.
I can riff because I've probably got more.
You don't need to riff. Anyway, I also realised that this wasn't even in response to my how's my bum and how's my tum.
No, and yet here we are.
But my bum and tum have actually been really good this week, so I have nothing to report. So it's better to talk about that. Right, Evie.
Okay.
How are your bum and tum?
I've got a new problem.
Go on.
I've got a new problem, not with the bum. But with the wheeze. Not poos, the wheeze now.
The wheeze, the worsening wheeze.
I think, as my doctor said, there are no such thing as a small bladder, only a weak bladder. And so there are no small parts, only small
That's
actors.
What it made me think of.
And so I've got a weak bladder. I do go for a wee a lot, especially when I'm anxious. And last night I didn't sleep very well because I had quite a big job to do today. And I had to get up early and I just couldn't quite settle.
Jesus, she's clearly, she is stressed.
I could not settle. And it's over the last year, I have noticed when I sit down for a wee, I used to sit down for a wee and then the wee would be finished.
Yeah.
I would wipe and finish the wee.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Now I have to wee. It finishes. And then I wait. Because now I've lost sensation to the point where it's happening. It's happened a year ago and then maybe sort of, I don't know, 7 months ago. And now it's happening on a weekly, not
you have
daily.
Your second week.
But I've never done it. I've never had it. I can't.
Mate, welcome to the fucking real world.
I have not had this before, but it's coming out and I can't feel it. So I go to wipe and I end up pissing on my hand.
Okay, no, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, no, that's not me.
No, you fucked up. No, I've done it.
Oh, you fucked up real good.
So sorry, so you're still weeing and you don't realise.
So I'll go, okay, the wee's finished. And then sometimes before I have gone, oh, maybe there's a bit more. And I've leant forward and managed to squeeze a bit more out. Whereas now I sit wee, I don't realise that there is more to come. And either maybe the stream has stopped and then as I go to wipe it starts again, or I've wiped and the stream has still been sort of very, very slowly or weakly coming out, but I've not felt it and I've ended up with wee on my hand. Fortunately, okay, I keep myself very, very hydrated, so my wees are always, apart from the first one in the morning,
sure.
completely clear, so it's not offensive wee on my hand, but it nonetheless, there's piss on my hands.
How often does this happen?
On a weekly basis. It was every blue moon. Then it was every few months. And now... I think I'm rushing.
And also, you like it must bring like a fear around the wipe. You must be scared to wipe.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I'm a bit disappointed, but yeah. I'm not afraid.
You're not afraid of it.
I'm not afraid of the pit. I just go, oh, that's a bit annoying. I'm going to have to wash quite thoroughly now.
Yeah, and it's
a bit wet, so I'm going to have to dry before I pull up my trousers, and then I need to burp again.
Is it the kind of thing that, like, you know, you got to be doing your Kegels?
Kegels.
Yeah.
I do a Kegel while it's inside. Spit in my mouth. Look at my eye. Sorry. I think I must, but I prided myself.
Is this just
that.
Our 30s?
I think it is. Because
I've noticed my blood has gotten weaker. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I wasn't expecting this to happen this quickly.
We've not had kids.
No, this is what I mean. Like, this is not ideal.
If this is a situation now... But I've always
this is it.
So if you've ever pissed on your hand and you've not realised,
or anyone else's for that matter,
or anyone else's hand, do you get involved in golden showers? Let us know, and you can email us at thebookcastofficial@gmail.com. This week, our focus is on faecal transplants, and our amazing guest knows all about it. We are speaking to Saffron Cassaday. Saffron has ulcerative colitis and is the director of the remarkable documentary Designer Shit, a film that explores this form of treatment and the power of poo. Welcome, Saffron. How was your bum and tum?
Today, my bum and tum are doing very well, actually.
Good.
That's wonderful to hear. Not often the reply we get.
You can tell we left like a long pause, like we're ready for the big story. Here we go. Fantastic. Well, congratulations.
How frequently are your bum and tum doing well?
Honestly, so my whole story is that I have ulcerative colitis, but I did this kind of alternative treatment. So for about 3.5 years now, my bum and tum have been doing very well, which is like insane for me because I spent 10 years really suffering. So
before you started the treatment and the documentary, which we'll come on to talk about, what treatments or medication were made available to you after your diagnosis?
I was put on a drug. It's called a 5-ASA medication. It was pretty mild. So the medication is taken orally, so you take tablets, but it's also taken rectally. So I had to do like an enema every single night, which at 21, when I was first diagnosed, I was like, what? Like, this goes where? Like, how do I? And after a while, you get very used to it. That was like my nightly routine. Every night I was doing a medicated enema. But what happened is that like that medication worked at first and then it stopped working. Mm-hmm. So I was still doing these medicated enemas every night, but I still wasn't having any relief. Like I was so sick every single day, a ton of really embarrassing symptoms. Started experimenting with diet. Share. The embarrassing ones.
Oh yeah. We're all over that. That's our jam.
I had such bad anxiety in any public situation. Driving in a car, getting stuck in traffic, like as soon as the car hit traffic, I was like, this is the moment that I'm going to shit myself for sure. Like the moment that I cannot get to a toilet is when it's going to happen. Yeah. Flying, like the security line at the airport, seatbelt fasten sign on the plane. I was always like, my mind just started going crazy. Like this is the time when I'm going to have to go to the bathroom.
Well, this makes me think of one of the opening bits of your documentary when you're in the car in the traffic jam. It's like, okay, I'm really nervous that I'm about to shit myself.
Yeah, I think that most people can relate to that. I think everybody's had that situation where you're like stuck in the car and you're like, everybody get the fuck out of my way now.
Beeping and flashing lights.
Yeah, many tickets have been gained surely through those situations.
Yeah, someone's giving birth in here, but it's not what you might think. I think the psychological safety around knowing where your closest toilet is when you have a bowel or bladder condition is everything. And then... I don't know about you, but actually some of the times where I have shit myself has been because I've known I'm so close to home and it's like my body just can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm.
100%. Yeah. And then you get to know like what bathrooms are your favorites and which ones you don't like. Yeah. Like in Canada, we have a franchise called Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons has like nice bathrooms with like single stall. Like you can be like alone in there. So I was like, I've always got to know where the Tim Hortons bathroom is. Yeah.
Tim Hortons are the ones that do those little tiny, they do the Dunkit, the Timbits.
Yeah, the like little circle donuts. Yeah.
Oh,
I had some time in Toronto and that was
No, I was about to say that was my main takeaway. That is absolute. That's very rude. I had an amazing time in Toronto. But I really do remember the Timbits. And
if you come back to Toronto, come for the Timbits and the bathroom at the Tim Hortons.
You've sold it. My two favorite things, donuts and then knowing there's somewhere that I can relieve myself after donuts.
Donuts on the toilet. What more could you want?
Perfect.
There you
Perfect.
Go.
So, Saffron, we kind of linked over Instagram as very recently. I mean, how recently actually has your documentary come out? Is it in the last year or so?
It was just released November 14th, so a couple of weeks ago, in Canada and the US. It's not out in the UK yet.
Amazing. Well, I think you added us on Instagram after listening to an episode with us and the Mac Twins, and then we kind of deep dived into your Instagram and were immediately hooked by your amazing documentary. Could you talk to us a little bit about it, how it got started?
Sure. So when I was first diagnosed with colitis, I heard of a treatment called fecal transplant, which is taking poop from a healthy donor and basically blending it up into an enema and putting it up your bum. Or now you can make little capsules out of it, so you'd be swallowing poop. But the whole point is you're trying to get somebody else's healthy poop into your gut in the hopes that the bugs from their poop will repopulate your gut and help to relieve some of your bowel-related symptoms. But we're also seeing that if you improve your gut symptoms, it can improve neurological conditions like autism and Parkinson's. So there's a lot of really cool research going on. I was so intrigued by fecal transplant, but it's not FDA approved here in North America. Actually, around the world, there's not really any way to access it. So,
and why is that? Why is it not FDA approved yet?
Well, when you're talking about a new treatment, they had to make a classification on what is human poop. Is it a drug or a tissue? Like, how do we bring this to the public? Should it be banked like blood, or should it be a drug? In which case we need like a formula that we can put into a pill that can like get a stamp of approval. So this kind of process of trying to figure out what it is or how to regulate it has just been going on for so long. And that's why it's not really getting to the public yet, because they haven't really figured out how to regulate it or get it out through doctors. So,
and I don't want to give too many spoilers into the documentary, but one of the amazing things about the doc is that the person who ends up donating the poo is your partner. How did this come about? Can you explain to people what makes designer shit? Who has the perfect poo, and how did you find it?
Well, in the clinical trials that are going on right now, they're finding stool donors that are like these perfect, healthy specimens. So
bastards, you can't absolute have, bastards.
Yeah. You can't have had any kind of like prior medical conditions, like whether it's depression or obesity, but also specifically your bowels have to be perfect. Like you can't have ever had any bowel problems. A perfectly formed bowel movement every single morning is like... that's a good stool donor.
I just can't imagine.
What a life. I cannot imagine that.
We met one of these stool donors. Like we went to a stool bank in Boston and we met this Harvard University student who was a stool donor. So he was getting paid to donate his stool. And I asked him like, what's the process? And he's like, well, when I feel like I need to go, I'll hop on my bike and bike to the clinic. It's about 20 minutes, maybe longer with traffic. I'm like, you can hold it for 20 minutes on a bicycle to like get to this clinic. Like, I could never.
And he's at Harvard, this guy.
Of course he's at Harvard and can cycle and go and donate his perfectly formed fecal matter.
And can anyone apply? Getting into Harvard? Like how do you become a poo donator?
He specifically said it was like a very rigorous testing process and it's harder to get into the stool donation program than it is to get into Harvard.
He's done both.
Guy, he'd win Squid Games. He'd be straight up there.
So what makes a poo great?
Well, there's the Bristol stool chart, right? So you'd have to be like, what is it? Like a 3 or a 4, I think, is like the basic metric. But also to get into these stool donation programs, you'd be testing your blood and stool for all kind of pathogens and things that we don't know are hidden in our poop that could be. So it's not enough to be like on paper a healthy person. They have to kind of get into your poop your and poo like, yeah.
Your poo on paper. And then What is the process if you're then doing it at home like you did with your partner? How does a fecal transplant work? I think we speak a lot about enemas, but maybe some of our listeners don't actually know what that is. If you could talk us the step-by-step guide to a home fecal transplant.
Sure. I hope nobody's eating right now because it's kind of disgusting.
Put the food away.
So I'm really lucky that my partner, my husband now, happens to be one of these like freakishly healthy people. Like he's basically never been on antibiotics for anything in his entire life. He's never had any health condition. So he was the perfect stool donor and I share a bathroom with him. So it worked out really well. Because the way we do it is, or the way we did it is, I would leave a little bowl for him in the bathroom. So when he would go to use the bathroom, he would just go into this disposable bowl that I would throw out after. I would take that poop and I would throw it in a blender that I bought just for this. It wasn't like our kitchen blender that we were like multitasking with. Like this is just my poop blender. Yeah.
Great. This is my poop blender.
You need a whole poo cupboard at this point. You can't just, yeah.
Poop knife.
So then you mix it with some saline solution and you want to turn it into a slurry that resembles, I was told to make it look like pumpkin soup in consistency. So okay. Once you get...
There's once pumpkin you get it, soup gone forever.
Once you get it to that consistency, you put it into like an enema, which is like a little bottle with a nozzle at the end. And then you would put that nozzle up your butt, squeeze it in, and hold it. Try to hold it up your butt for at least an hour. And that's the process.
An hour?
Yeah.
The whole bottle, all of it has to go up. Everything must go.
Yep.
Ooh, I don't know. I just couldn't imagine holding that volume in there for an hour.
I reckon you could handle it.
Thanks, Claude. I think that's a compliment. So what would you do in that hour? Would you just have to lie on the floor and sort of tense up? What does that hour look like?
Lie on the floor, sometimes like legs up on the wall or like pillow under the bum to like keep yourself elevated. Yep. So the poop's going like up. Listen to a podcast, read a book. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
try to make it like, you know, spa activity.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, okay. Guys, after work, I'm just going to go home and set myself up a lovely little lemoner.
listen to my podcast.
And Saffron, how did this, if at all, impact your relationship? I mean, the lovely foreplay of leaving the bowl out and everything, but...
I think that's deeply romantic.
Yeah, the same. But did it build it in a positive way because he was doing such an amazing thing for you?
It did build it in a positive way. I mean, from his perspective, he is not grossed out by poop or anything like that at all. Like, he thought, he was so proud of himself that he even had this elite poop. Like, he was like, okay, like, I have to, like, do good with this perfect poop that I have been gifted. And I think for him, like, you know, when I told him when we first started dating that I had ulcerative colitis, again, like, he did not care. He's so like non-judgmental about that stuff. He doesn't find it gross. But my frequent bathroom trips were just annoying to him. So from his perspective, he's like, if I can help you and you're not barging in on me in the bathroom all the time, because we were sharing like one bathroom in our apartment at the time, he's like, I'm down to do this if it's gonna help.
I also love that he, you know, we've all, it is an amazing thing that he did for you, but then we've all bigged him up like, what a hero. He is still just giving
doing
you
a poo.
But we're like, this guy.
You're the one who's having to squirt it up there, really, aren't you? You're doing
that's
the hard
thing.
Work.
That's what I say too. Everybody's like, oh my God, he's such a hero. I'm like, he is for sure for agreeing to do this, but he also is just pooping in a bowl. I'm the one who's
which
like
be doing anyway.
Getting I'm getting up close and personal, like smelling it. Like, okay, I would wear a mask and somebody gave me the advice to put like Vicks vapor rub on my nose, nice, to try to disguise the smell. It didn't work though, because then it just smelt like Vicks vapor rub and shit. So now the smell of Vicks vapor rub, I'm like, I associate it with poop.
I have the exact same thing with the smell of fresh cotton, because when I had a terrible ongoing episode, sort of 4 days of sort of perpetual diarrhea in the bathroom. I was like, I need to cover this with a really nice smell. So I got fresh cotton diffuser. Mm. And now every time I smell that scent, I'm just like, ooh, diarrhea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You said the association is bleak.
Every single time. So that's a shame about Vicks Rub.
We've lost pumpkin soup today. I feel like we should pour one out for the heroes we've lost. We've lost pumpkin soup. We've lost Vicks Rub. That's okay.
And fresh cotton. So how did you then make the documentary, and where did that sit in relation to having done this process? When did the documentary take shape?
So I'm trying to think of what came first. First, I was obsessed with fecal transplant and just researching it. Mm-hmm. And I am a documentary filmmaker. Like, I'm a video editor and stuff, but I do documentary films sometimes. And because I was obsessed with this topic, I just wanted to interview all these like leading researchers and experts and find out more about it. So as I started interviewing them for this film, I started to be convinced more and more that I should do this myself. So then I started doing it myself and filming it. And that's the documentary. It's me interviewing these people while simultaneously experimenting with fecal transplant.
And how did you find the process of, you know, if being a documentary maker yourself, you're now behind the camera, mm-hmm. and also going through some quite emotional processes. What was that like for you to document it?
It was difficult at times. And I think that actually the most difficult thing was fecal transplant is still in the research phase. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of overpromising that's happening right now. So for me, I had a really positive experience where it worked really well. I went from being really ill with colitis for 10 years to not having a single symptom for 3.5 years. It worked out well for me, but it doesn't always work that well. And we're not really sure why yet. So one thing that I had to grapple with while I was making this film was, I don't want to overpromise. I don't want to make this film that's like, hey, everybody should go out and do fecal transplant and you'll all get better, because there are risks. Mm-hmm. So I felt this responsibility of presenting the science responsibly and not overpromising to the audience. So that was the hardest part, I would say.
And are the risks overpromising, or are there risks and side effects with fecal transplants?
There are risks and side effects with fecal transplant. I mean, anything that lives in your poop can be transferred. So we're talking about like E. coli, C. diff, these bug parasites that could live in your poop and you have no idea. Like on paper, again, you could be a really healthy stool donor, but there could be something hiding in your poop that when you give it to somebody else who is sick, it could make them really sick. And likewise, I mean, kind of anything that you would get from a blood transfusion. So like hepatitis, stuff like that. So there are these things that could be transferred that could be dangerous.
Literally sitting on a secret.
Yeah, literally. So how far are we, do you think, from this being available to people around the world? How far are we down the process of making this a known treatment for, I'm assuming, many bowel conditions, maybe not ulcerative colitis, others as well?
So you can already access this treatment if you have a gut infection called C. difficile. This is known as a cure for C. difficile. Yeah. One fecal transplant will cure C. difficile with like a 90% success rate. Like, it's crazy how well it works. Yeah. And people die from C. difficile. Like, it's a really deadly gut infection, and this is the perfect cure for it. So you can access it for that. When it comes to colitis, I think that that will be the next one that we start to see access for. But I think we're still at least 5-10 years away from that. And then there are clinical trials going on for autism as well, because, of course, autism is a condition for which there are no treatments. And this seems to be quite effective in early research. So I have seen a lot of trials being fast-tracked where they're trying to understand the mechanism a bit more of how this works for autism. And hopefully that will be something that's available to patients soon.
It really is fascinating. I work in an autism provision in a primary school. So watching the documentary and hearing them talk about how there's been some benefits for children with their speech and the speed that happened, that is quite incredible. It's also, when I watched it, I felt a little bit tense, because I think when we talk about things like autism or Parkinson's, there's so much emotion behind some of these conditions. And I wonder for families as well, whether, like you said about overpromising, that can be really dangerous to start offering things, particularly for parents who are
of children.
So desperate for their children to speak. I'm not surprised when we start talking about certain conditions why this may take a very long time for anybody to trust it and to trust themselves with potentially promising that to families.
Absolutely. And I will say with the autism trials, the goal was to see if this could help children with autism with their bowel problems, because a lot of autistic children have bowel problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't, let's do this and see if it changes a child's behavior. Let's see if we can help them with their bowel problems. It was just a happy accident that for some of these severely autistic, nonverbal children, they started to develop language. And we have a couple of parents of autistic children on our team with our film. And, you know, it depends on where you are on the spectrum. These women said, you know, I don't want my child's personality to change. Exactly. I like my kid the way he is, so I'm not interested in fecal transplant. This is more so for those parents who, you know, are really struggling with a child who want a treatment like this. And I agree, we don't want to overpromise it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's exciting research to keep an eye out for, because, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating, again, sort of the connection between the brain and the gut. And it's something that we hear and talk about time and time again, whether or not that's anxiety or autism or IBD, the connection between, well, that gut-brain axis is just undeniable. And it's sort of amazing and surprising, and yet makes complete sense at the same time. I wonder, what were there any sort of light bulb moments for you making this documentary, and any moments that really, really surprised you?
I think, so I set out at the beginning of this journey, I really wanted to cure my colitis. And that was like my end point, was like, I never want to be on medication again. And I just want to reverse this condition entirely. I will admit, like, I have been symptom free for 3.5 years, but I am still on a mild medication. So I went from being a patient for who medication was not working anymore to now being a patient who's in healthy remission with medication. And that was a light bulb moment for me, where I'm like, it's not giving up or settling to say I'm happy with where I am. I shot for, like, you know, the moon and landed in the stars. That whole thing was like, you know, I'm not where I hoped that I would be, but I've become more comfortable with that. I'm just happy to have had some improvement. You know, my life is better now. I can actually leave the house without having a panic attack. And even though I'm still on a bit of medication, like, I'm okay with that. That's better than improvement.
It's amazing, Saffron. It's so wonderful to hear. And what is your biggest hope that people will take away from the documentary?
I guess I'm just hoping that people start looking at fecal transplant as actual science. I think a lot of people think, that's so gross, you're so weird for doing that. And I'm already getting a lot of flack. Like, I see, like, articles being written about the film in the comment section, or people who just, like, think I'm a total weirdo. And I'll take that, but... But people are really suffering, and I really think that this is promising research that, you know, I'm not saying everybody should go out and do DIY fecal transplant, but I think that this is a field that should be taken seriously and seen as exciting and cool, not just gross and weird.
Absolutely. I think people can be so often clouded by what they perceive to be shocking, or what they think might shock other people. But actually, we have blood transfusions. We donate bone marrow. Why should we not? Yeah. It's a waste product anyway.
Yeah.
Why should we not look into that? So hopefully people would learn and listen and accept it by watching the documentary. How might somebody do that? You say the documentary is already available in Canada and the US?
And I think you can buy it from our website anywhere in the world. So our website is designershitdocumentary.com, and you can buy the film there. And yeah, I just want to thank you guys for having this podcast, because when I was coming out with this film, I was like, oh, what are people going to think of me for talking about this topic? And now, as I do talk about this topic and I meet people like you guys who are just talking about poop in this, like, open and honest way and having a laugh about it, I just think it's so cool. Like, I'm so inspired. It makes me feel like less of a weirdo for being able to talk about this stuff.
Saffron, it's definitely you that's the inspiration. After watching your documentary, I was very excited to talk to you. You're my new favorite celebrity. But I think also it's also so important when we talk about, like, fear of the disgust, and that's what puts people off. Sometimes all we need to do is put something shiny over it so people might just peer in. And I think your documentary is so beautifully shot.
Yeah, it's stunning.
That when you're watching it, I also wonder if that's a way of drawing people in. We said the same thing to the Mack twins. everything that they do is pink and sexy and beautiful. And it's almost sad to think we just need to make those small, very kind of, what's the word, very boring changes to get people to take interest. And I think the way that you have created that hopefully will pay off, because it's beautiful the way you've shot it.
Oh, thank you so much. And likewise for your podcast. I mean, masking it with humor of like, you know, this is the way in. Let's laugh about it. And then we're actually talking about something that's really affecting people, but we're doing it in a way that we're inviting you in because it's funny. I think it's so fantastic. So thank you guys.
Oh, thank you. Speaking of funny, actually, before we let you go, are there any toilet tales that you would like to share with our listeners? We always probe guests, quite literally, about any embarrassing toilet tales, funny, humorous medical appointments that you might want to share.
Sure. Okay. So I'll tell you the story that haunts me the most is I was in Italy with my family. This was like 10 years ago. I was like in my mid-20s. My entire family, like my siblings with their partners, my uncle, my cousin, and we were in Tuscany and we're like, let's go to Pisa for the day. Everybody wanted to wake up at 7 a.m. to take this trip, this hour and a half trip. So getting in a minivan with my entire family at 7 a.m. is like my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Sure enough, halfway through this trip, I'm like, okay, we got to pull over. My family's so used to this at this point. Like, okay, Saf has to go, pull over. But we're driving through like farmland and there were no bathrooms. And finally we find this gas station and I crawl out of the minivan and I'm running up and I'm about to open that door. And exactly what you were saying, like, as I get closer to the door, my butthole is opening. Like, it's coming.
Of course it is.
And I go to open the door and of course it's locked because it's 7:30 in the morning. So no. I am like, this is happening. I start running around the back of the building. And as I'm running, I'm like pulling off my pants. And I get to the back of the building, right as I'm pulling down my pants, there's this old Italian man. And I guess he like runs this gas station and his house is behind the gas station and no. He's back there gardening.
No.
And I can't stop it. So my pants are down and I'm just like, I'm so sorry. 10 feet away from this guy pooping. And he didn't say anything. He just looked at me and gave the biggest sigh. Like he was so disappointed. He was just like, ugh. And he just turned around and continued gardening. And I think I pulled like a maxi pad out of my purse and wiped really quickly and just ran back into the van. I'm like, let's go, let's get out.
And we're done.
Here.
I just love that sigh as if it's like, oh, we've had another Canadian tourist doing it.
Can
again.
I please just have one day gardening. Without somebody shitting in front of me?
Oh, maybe it was good for his garden. I don't know. Like, I just, yes. His face haunts me. Like, I feel so bad.
He should be grateful for the manure.
Absolutely.
Good for the-
You were just being a donor yourself.
Yeah,
you as you've now experienced, you know, it all goes around. It's one big circle of life.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And your donation to the Turd Tales. Where can people find you on social media? If they want?
Yeah, we're a designer shit documentary on Instagram. And yeah, we're quite responsive on Instagram and through our website, designershitdocumentary.com. If you have any questions for me about fecal transplant, we're always happy to answer that for people. So,
honestly, Saffron, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to chat to you.
Saffron!
Saffron, where have you gone? You've gone back to Toronto. Please don't go.
I hate myself.
Do you want to do that again? Or are we okay with that going out into the world?
We could do another as an option.
All right. Saffron.
Saffron. No, let's just press on. Saffron, thank you so much for talking to us. What an absolute mega hun you are. And I love what she was saying about, let's make this normal. And the way people are very quick to instinctually judge, but if we actually just watch the documentary, listen to the science and look at it, we want to take away that shock disgust factor and actually just look at it objectively and go, yeah, this makes complete sense. And the evidence is that it works.
And also for anybody worried about the disgust factor, that you literally don't see any. They show a couple of like bits of them, you know, like a bit like you're watching Grey's Anatomy, what you might see down the video camera of the tube or whatever. But it's not like every 2 seconds you're seeing a poo.
No.
Like it's so well done. It's it's genuinely, when I say beautiful, it's the first time, and we speak to a lot of people about this. I am inherently quite a lazy person, as already discussed in the intro of this podcast.
She's a coaster.
I am a coaster. I'm a human coaster with rings around me. No, I instinctively was like, okay, I need to fucking sort out my gut. Like, it's that we speak about this so much, and in my head I'm going, I know I need to sort this out. I know I need to spend some money and look at what, you know, what probiotics need to take. I watched this and I was like, I felt excited to explore it because of the possibilities and of,
it's exciting, yeah.
Of what this could do for people with anxiety, with depression. It's not just about, obviously it's incredible what it could do for people with colitis and Crohn's, and that in itself is obviously the main point of it, and it's so exciting. But watching somebody's journey go through it and the difference it made, I was like, oh my God, I've got to freaking just sort my shit out.
Well, it is easy to say that. It is obviously practically a lot harder than that. But you're so right to identify, maybe we might use this treatment to treat the gut issues, but actually not just about that. No, Saffron is able to leave her home without mm-hmm. feeling anxious. Yeah. And actually the psychological impact of that is colossal. So it's a very worthy documentary. I would highly, highly recommend that you go watch it.
Go watch it. And thank you for joining us for another episode where we speak to people who are really intelligent and we bullshit around for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh my God. We coast through life.
Coasting through life.
With, you know, so much strife.
With Wicked, the musical. Do you know that one?
No.
Dancing through life, skimming the surface. No, that's what I did of my university degree. I coasted through life and I skimmed the surface.
Well, who's laughing now?
Fuck you.
Fiona, I'm not going to say.
Oh, mate, you and names on this podcast.
But to be fair, her name was Fiona Macbeth.
Yeah, her name was Fiona Macbeth.
And she said to you that you were coasting through life.
Can I just say as well, one of the reasons why I was very distracted was me and Richard just started dating at this point in my life and I was getting laid, y'all.
Oh God, I know that because we went on one of the sofas upstairs and you were essentially
my mum listens to this.
Flashing in a pair of leggings, like literally like man spreading. And I was like, Claudia, what's wrong? She was like, with this smug look on her face, she went, bit sore. Do you remember doing that?
Mum, don't. Just stop listening to this podcast. How many times have I got to warn you? No good of this will come for you.
You are the person who said getting laid. I didn't start that.
I know, but like...
And you did do that.
In a way, we were talking about this documentary. Like, there's a difference between talking about, there's a difference between really, really talking about it, going in deep.
Oh
my God.
I'm sorry you brought up your sex life then.
My bad.
Well, our next episode was going to be Christmas is here. Hark all the bells.
Yeah.
Is it? Is that right? It'd be Christmas.
Yeah. It'll be Christmas Eve.
Twas the night before Christmas.
No, it won't. Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
And we're going to deliver a little sack of shit for you all. Have you been naughty or nice? If you've been naughty, you're going to get a sack of crap. Crap sack.
I'm just watching you. Just do your thing.
Okay. I think I should leave it there on reflection.
All right. Hope everyone enjoyed Strictly last night. And
oh, for fuck's sake. Of course it had to.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.